Today is Monday, March 30th, 2020, Monday of the fifth week of Lent. And it's crazy. It's the fifth week of Lent already, and I was starting to freak out this morning when I said Mass because there's all these different prefaces for Lent, right? So there's preface 1 through 4. Each Sunday gets its own proper one, and fifth week of Lent, there is no preface 5. Now, during Lent, you can use any of the prefaces, but for the fifth week of Lent and for the beginning part of Holy Week, you can use preface 1 or 2 of the Passion of the Lord. And I flip a page looking for preface 5 of Lent. This is what happens when you say Mass without sufficiently caffeinating yourself. And it wasn't there. It was this thing. And I'm like, what day is it? What week is it? Is it still March? Is it still 2020? Can any of this end? So, like, just a weird kind of thing. Anyway, the point is, it's Monday, and it's the fifth week of Lent. And it's all well and good. Yesterday, I had promised you like an additional post with thoughts about the whole situation, and that didn't happen. I'll tell you why that didn't happen. It wasn't necessarily my fault. Kind of was. I had a power outage yesterday afternoon. There was this important conference call that we had. We didn't have to be on it, but I chose to be. Where the bishop was kind of explaining his rationale for some of the things that he did. So I wanted to record after that because I felt like I needed to hear what he had to say first so that I was having a well-formed opinion. I think that's important. And he said a bunch of really good stuff, and I would like to talk about it. But anyway, shortly after we got off the call, I'm sitting here at my desk. I'm doing a couple of things, and all of a sudden, the office gets very dark. And my computer starts making strange noises, and I realize, oh, shoot, the power's out. Because, you know, we had hurricane-force winds, or nearly enough, anyway. So, so much for that, right? So I just shut everything down before my power supply ran out, grabbed a book, and went outside. And I read for a while until I kind of noticed that the lights were back on. I could see into my living room from where I was sitting, and I left the lamp on so I would know. So I just had to look up every so often. By the time I came back, it was time for me to get on a Zoom call with a bunch of my priest friends. We normally get together Sunday nights anyway for, like, beers and wings and just to kind of decompress from the weekend and whatever. And obviously we can't do that anymore. So we've been getting together a little bit earlier on Sundays for a little hangout. So I did that, and that was actually fantastic. That really is one of the best parts of my week, whether we're doing it live or we're doing it virtually. And then I wound up zooming into a youth group meeting, and by that point it was late, and I just didn't feel like recording anything. And then today I am probably not going to get a chance to record it because there's stuff to do, and later I plan on going over to Mom's, and obviously I can't record there. I probably couldn't. So maybe I could do like a voice memo on my phone, but I would have no idea what to do with that after I did it. And I'm not going to do that. So it is what it is. And probably one of those things that I talk about wanting to do and will never actually do. I'm really good at that. I'm so good at procrastination. I'll tell you about it later. Anyway, let's talk about these readings today because they're good readings. And the one is quite long, so we always dreaded when you were in seminary, like, having to be the lector for this particular day, because our director of liturgy, and this is where I got this viewpoint from, like, did not believe in the short form of any readings. Well, the long form of this reading today is, like, ridiculous. It's most of the 13th chapter of the book of Daniel. Actually, it leaves some parts out, and it's still super long. But it's the story of Susanna, and if you don't know it, you know, read your Bible. I'm not going to read this to you because we will be here all day. But it's really good how Daniel catches these guys in a lie and saves Susanna from an unjust execution. The gospel is a story that you know well, and I know I've preached on this at Immaculate Conception, and I think I used that same homily at St. Richard's. I might be lying about that. I might have given it when I was a college chaplain. But boy, there's a lot to reflect about in that reading too. And without, like, I don't want to have to be here all day recording this kind of stuff. I mean, there's so much good in this, in that gospel story. What is Jesus writing on the ground? I'm getting ahead of myself. In both instances, though, I think what's important to consider is who these women have recourse to, who Susanna goes to for help, and who this woman who was caught in the act of adultery goes to for help. Like, Susanna knows she's being set up, right? She is completely innocent in this whole thing, and she didn't do anything wrong. This is as unjust of a situation as you can find yourself in. And she knows she's stuck. Like, she even says to these men, "I am completely trapped. If I yield, it will be my death. If I refuse, I cannot escape your power. Yet it is better for me to fall into your power without guilt than to sin before the Lord." And so, you know, knowing that she has no escape, she puts her trust. She says, "You know what? I'm just going to put myself into this situation because I'm not going to allow myself to fall into sin." Like, she doesn't look for an easy way out. She doesn't try to negotiate. She doesn't do anything to, like, remove herself from a dangerous situation. She just trusts that by not sinning before the Lord, by not breaking this relationship that she has with him, somehow things are going to work out. And at first, it certainly doesn't seem like it. Like, these men, these old men, they lie, and people believe their testimony because of who they should be. And Susanna doesn't contradict them when it comes to her juridical procedures. She doesn't accuse them of the lies that they are very, well, it's not obvious, but the lies that they are most certainly telling. She doesn't do any of that. She offers really nothing in her own defense. Her cry is a prayer. O eternal God, you know what is hidden and are aware of all things before they come to be. You know that they have testified falsely against me. Again, this is not her accusing people in the courtroom. This is just her talking to God. Here I am about to die, though I have done none of the things with which these wicked men have charged me. She only talks to God in this whole thing. Doesn't bother saying anything in her own defense. She's trusting completely in the merciful love of God. And what's the very next line? The Lord heard her prayer. And so he stirs up the spirit of Daniel, who winds up saying, like, we can't do this, you're wrong. And he catches the men in their perjury and is able to wind up saving Susanna's life and ultimately condemning these men who are, in fact, quite sinful. And so justice is done that day and innocent blood is spared. In the gospel, you've got this woman who was caught in the very act of adultery. And when they bring the woman to Jesus, she doesn't say anything. I mean, they have her dead to rights. Now, there's a whole lot of questions that come up, like, how did you catch her in that, and where's the guy? Because the punishment for him is just as bad. And they want to stone her to death, is what they say, which is not actually what the law says. But nevertheless, they're trying to trap Jesus, and they're using this poor woman as a foil to do that. But she doesn't offer anything in her defense. She doesn't argue. She doesn't, make any sort of complaint about this. She just kind of stands there. And at this point, you know, she's probably quite convinced of her own guilt. And we don't necessarily know what it means to be caught in the very act of adultery. But it would seem that, there's not a whole lot she can say here, right? Like, it's nulla contender. It's no contest. So she doesn't say anything. She's just going to kind of trust, I suppose. I would hope that there's this kind of holy resignation to whatever happens next is going to be in accord with the law of Moses. So I'm just going to face the music. And she's just going to trust that whatever comes is what is supposed to come. And Jesus just bends down and writes on the ground with his finger. The silence of Jesus in that moment is deafening. Because he doesn't say to put her to death, but he doesn't say to just let her go. There's this tremendous tension there that everyone has to be feeling. The scribes and the Pharisees, they want blood, or at least they want to be able to capture Jesus in saying something. The woman wants her freedom, or she at least wants some kind of decision to be made. Can you imagine the psychological torture this is for her? And Jesus' disciples, I'm sure, what is he going to do? How does he fix this? How do we solve this? What are we supposed to do and confront her with this situation? He doesn't say anything. There's this tremendous tension there that is uncomfortable. And sometimes we're called to live in that uncomfortability. And we don't like it. And I think because we don't like to be uncomfortable anymore, we rush to do things that maybe we have no right to do. Like Susanna has to feel very uncomfortable being dragged to the court before all these people and having her good name just kind of dragged through the dirt, knowing that these people are lying and there's nothing that she can do to really stop them. Like, this makes her very uncomfortable, but rather than fight back, she trusts in the Lord. This nameless woman in the Gospel of John is very uncomfortable in this moment, but there's nothing that she can do. She just has to kind of trust in the Lord, or at least trust in this strange rabbi that people seem to be, are starting to call the Christ, and could he really be that? Who knows? You have to be able to live in that tension. We don't like to live in the tension, right? So we try to make things happen ourselves. We're going to fight back, darn it. We're going to argue this case the best way we can, or we're going to run from it as much as we can, or we're going to drag you down with us. If you're going to take me out, then I'm going to take you out too, and I'll make you pay for this because this isn't fair, or I don't feel like this is fair, or any of that kind of stuff. And sometimes when we do those sorts of things, we wind up causing more harm than good. We make our situation so much worse than it already is. We have to live in the tension. We have to live in the fear. We don't have to live in doubt. There's no room for that. But if we are people of faith, then we need to be people of faith. And we need to be people that are willing to trust completely in the inner workings of God. I've been reading this really great book by, he wasn't a bishop yet, but the book's by Bishop Barron, and probably hope to get it finished in the next couple of days, and maybe I'll do a book review on it. It's probably another project I'll never get done. But he was kind of quoting, or at least paraphrasing, St. Anselm. He was talking about freedom. And for Anselm, the idea of freedom is not the ability to say yes or no to a certain thing. It's not like we're just kind of hovering over this binary solution set where either we consent or we don't consent to a certain thing. For Anselm, freedom, true freedom, is the ability to only say yes. Because a person that's truly free is going to recognize things as coming from God, even the negative things. Because in saying yes to whatever this negative thing is, we allow God to be magnified in us. We allow God to work through us. We make ourselves a deeper witness of Him. And so if we're people of faith, we're called to be people that live in the freedom that's been won for us. And so in this tension, in this moment of confusion, in this moment of uncertainty, our only response can be saying yes to the Lord. We find ourselves in this great moment of tension now. Just everything is upside down and backwards, and I've used that phrase a lot. I don't know where I got it from, but I like it, so whatever. But in this moment of tension, in this upside downness and backwardness of the dumpster fire that 2020 has become to this point, we need to be able to exercise our freedom and say yes to God. Yes, I will stay faithful in this storm. Yes, I am uncomfortable, and yes, I don't like what's going on here, but yes, I believe in you. And so I will turn my life upside down. I will step way outside of my comfort zone. I will be afraid, but I will do it trusting and believing in you. I believe that innocent blood will be saved, as Susanna did. And I will not condemn myself or others the way that Jesus doesn't allow people to condemn this woman. I want to be able to move forward. I want to go. I want to do the things that you've made me to do. So I'm going to trust because I believe that I'm free. Anyway, just a thought. Like I said, these are very long readings, and there's an awful lot to unpack, and I, that just Anselm thing's been floating in my brain for a while now, and I just needed to get it out, and probably need to develop the thought more, but I don't know. That's kind of where we're at with everything. yeah, like I said, I don't think I'll have another post for today, but I'll be back tomorrow and we'll see what tomorrow holds. I think tomorrow I'm gonna rip apart a sacristy at one of the churches and just try to clean some stuff up. So I don't know what my posting schedule will look like, but we'll find out together, won't we? So have a wonderful day. Say your prayers. Be safe. Wash your hands. Talk to you soon.